The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.
Hi there, welcome along to a very emotional episode of the Women's Football Podcast. This is my last, but more importantly, Kieran, it's our 1 year anniversary. Did you ever think, back when we started a year ago, that it would last this long?
Definitely not, and I think it's been great so far, and I think I look forward to the next year, even though it is going to be without you by my side, pal.
I'm going to miss you. However, big occasion, big birthday. We need someone who's prone to those big game occasions. Someone who's not going to be fazed by the occasion. We are delighted to introduce our guest presenter for this episode, Kelly Smith. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Have you done any presenting before?
No, never. This is my first time, so I'm looking forward to it.
Where you going? Fantastic. What could go wrong? Right, what are we going to rattle through on the show today?
So, seeing as we've got Kelly, I think it would be important to talk about the Champions League. Obviously, we're recording this before their second leg. By the time this comes out, they will have played the second leg, so we're hoping for Kelly's sake that we are talking about an Arsenal victory in our next show. But I think it would be important to talk about the Champions League as a whole. Obviously, there were some big victories in the first legs that I think we need to discuss with Kelly. We'll talk about the FAWSL. Obviously, it starts in a couple of weeks, so let's have a look at some of the teams and talk to Kelly about her hopes for Arsenal and some of the players that maybe we should look out for. We've got an interview with Kosovari Aslani.
Oh, finally!
I know. It's taken me a little while to get hold of her, but she did come...
Only a year?
Not quite a year. But, she's come through for us. We're going to speak to her about PSG and a few other things, such as Sweden. And we obviously have the NWSL starting in a couple of weeks as well, so we'll have a little look at that. And we spoke to Paul Riley, the Portland Thorns coach, so he was great and looking forward to playing that one.
Fantastic. Let's get started.
The Women's Football Podcast would like to thank our partners. Want more women's football? Subscribe to She Kicks magazine at
shekicks.net.
And the Women's Football Podcast is part of the Soccer Desk Network.
TheSoccerDesk.com.
Right, Kieran, let's talk about the Champions League and a few heavy scores, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were disappointed to see quarter-final matches being so heavily dominated by one team. Obviously, we saw Tirso overcome Neuland back 8-1. We saw Potsdam overcome Torres from Italy 8-0 away from home, and Wolfsburg were a very comfortable 3-0 winners over Barcelona. But I think we obviously know that Kelly's game is still very much open, and I think many people expected that. But I guess I would ask her, do we need to have a restructure? A lot of people were talking about the fact that you've got seeded sides coming against unseeded sides that are quite big early on. I mean, I just wondered what your view on that was.
Yeah, it's a tough one because obviously, you know, most teams are champions or runners-up, so it's how you seed these teams. Like, we, you know, just speaking before the draw was announced for the quarterfinals, we wanted to stay away from Tirso, but the bare fact that they've got, you know, Marta on their team, they've got Kristen Press, who are all, you know, big name players within the game, and they're not seeded, so they can get anybody in the group. So I think it doesn't really need to be looked at. How we do that, I don't know.
Kieran?
Well, I don't know. I think they need to almost look at the quality of the teams, not necessarily their history in the competition. As we were talking to Kelly beforehand, is Tirso are a prime example. They weren't seeded for this competition. PSG were. They ended up meeting early on in the competition. Very close game over the two legs. You know, you'd rather see that game in the quarterfinal than an 8-1 thrashing for Neuland Bank. I'm not saying that Neuland Bank don't deserve to be in the quarterfinals. If they've won their games up to this point, they should be there. But it's no good for them to see them getting hammered in a quarterfinal match. And, you know, we had Linda Eriksson, who obviously came on our last show, who spoke to a few of the Tirso girls. And also, you know, while she was in the media area, she said that, you know, there were a few Neuland Bank girls that were visibly upset by the game. And you don't want to see that. You genuinely don't want to see that. But I think it might be worth hearing what the Tirso girls have got to say. So she spoke to Kristen Press, she spoke to Whitney Engen, and she spoke to Megan Klingenberg.
Champions League, it's hard to ever expect anything. You know, soccer's so crazy and there's so many high stakes here that I don't think that it was something that we went in with, like, oh, we can, you know, do this or that. It was more, we have to give our best, and we knew that our best was good enough, and we'll see where the pieces fall after that.
Oh, well, we've got a really talented group of people here, and I think that the last couple of weeks have been definitely an emotionally trying time. You know, are we here? Are we going? Kind of what's going on? But at the end of the day, I think if anything, we had a lot of energy built up inside of us because of it, and we were excited to come out here and prove a point that we want to do as much as we can to take this team as far as we can. And obviously, anytime you play a quarterfinal in such a big match, you hope to put together a performance like that, and you know, we played a great side today, and we just were able to finish our chances.
I think, honestly, it's been rough, but we've been focusing on our games regardless of what was happening outside of the team. We can only focus on what we can control, and we can control our soccer. So we've been preparing like for the last 4 months for this, and so it just feels really good to get that kind of result after all the stress that we've been through this week.
So there are two of those American girls there. It's an interesting point you raised, Kieran, before those sound bites. How do you judge a team's quality if you're then going to change the seedings?
I would honestly look at the standard of the league. We know that the Damallsvenskan is one of the stronger in Europe. You've got teams like Tiraso and Malmo and Gothenburg who have all played in the Champions League over the last few years. I'm amazed that Tiraso weren't seeded. I think you look at France with PSG and Lyon, England obviously with Arsenal with their record in the Champions League as well. I just don't want to see massive clubs coming up against each other earlier on in the tournament because it makes for very one-sided games later on, as we've seen at this quarterfinal stage.
Kelly, I'm going to slightly change tack with you. Surely, if you're in the Champions League, it doesn't matter what round you are, you're going to face a big team eventually.
Yeah, it normally comes at the, you know, the quarterfinal stages, especially has been for us. You know, Birmingham are a tough tie, and we know all about them, obviously, from playing the FA WSL. But the quarterfinal stage is normally where you come up against your better teams. And if you're missing, you know, a top German side or a top Swedish side in the rounds before, it doesn't make good viewing for the game. Like, who wants to... I certainly would want to play in a quarterfinal or even a semi-final. It'd be a close occasion rather than trouncing the team 8 or 9-0. It doesn't make good viewing for women's football. You want the teams to be, you know, at kind of an equal level. And that's what we want in the quarterfinals, semi-finals and even the final stage. You don't want to see any hammer-ins.
And I think Kelly raises a good point there. We're trying to promote women's football. We're trying to show that it has a place as a major sport in this country and in Europe. And we're trying to attract new fans. We're trying to attract people to the game. And when they see quarterfinal ties being so heavily one-sided, they're going to look at it and they think it's a bit of a joke. And I certainly don't want that to be the case. And I think Kelly makes a great point there. You want to play big teams in the latter stages that are close games.
Obviously, Kelly, for you, it's quite tough because your Champions League game is your first sort of pre-season game. How do you get yourself ready for that? It's such a massive game, but you've not played for so long.
Yeah, it's not ideal. You know, as of, you know, over the Christmas period, we come back in and we're training since, you know, the beginning of January. The whole focus from January on till our first Champions League game, that was our main focus. You know, for 3 months we're just preparing for this one game, and we're playing our pre-season games against, you know, lesser teams within England, and it's a bit of a mental battle really, because you know you're focusing, it's a pre-season, you're focusing on this one game, but you want to be at the races come the first game. And some of the teams that we play, no disrespect to them, they're at a lower level than us. So when we play our first game, we'd ideally like to be, you know, midway through our season when we're, you know, at the races kind of thing. So it's kind of a tough one for us and for Birmingham to some extent, because they're in the same position. But if we would have played like a Lyon, where they're in full flow of their season, we're at a disadvantage because they're, you know, midway through their season or coming to the end of their season, so they've got a lot of competitive games under their belt. But I guess we could be grateful that Birmingham are in the same position. We could have been up against another team that is in their competition. So I don't think we can't complain too much, but I do sometimes feel like Arsenal or an FAWSL team, if they're in Europe, will be at a disadvantage because then it's their first game of a competitive season.
Does something have to change then, do you think?
Well, our seasons change. You know, when we was in a 9-month season, it was different because we were coming off the back end of our season and then playing Champions League. But this year, you know, it's our first competitive game, so I think the change of our league hasn't helped with Champions League, but you can't have it your own way all the time.
Kieran, one team that fell foul of the seeding systems was Paris Saint-Germain, and that leads us nicely into you finally reaching the holy grail of interviews. You want to introduce her?
Yeah, obviously PSG were a seeded team in the Champions League, but came up against an unseeded team in Tirso earlier in the competition. And I managed to catch up with PSG's striker, wide player, forward, whatever you want to describe her as, Kosovari Aslani. So we talked about PSG, Sweden, European Championships, lots of different things. So here she is. All right, so I'm delighted to be joined on this anniversary show of the Women's Football Podcast by Swedish striker Kosovari Aslani. But for the sake of the interview, we're going to call her Kossa because Kosovari is a bit too formal. So Kossa, thanks for joining us. Let's start off by discussing the recent Algarve Cup. You obviously finished fourth in the tournament. How do you feel it went personally for you and for Sweden?
I think we started off the tournament good and with the win over Denmark and US. But after that, I think, I mean, we're expecting to play the final since we only needed 1-1 against Japan, but we conceded a goal in the 89th minute, so that's a bit of disappointment. But, I mean, we're definitely better than to end up fourth in that tournament. But I think we got, like, time to work on our new system and try to play a different kind of football than we've been doing the last year.
Now, I don't want to talk too much about the Algarve Cup because by the time this interview comes out, it will be a few weeks past. But the headline in one of the Swedish newspapers was "The Crown Has Fallen" when Sweden beat the US women's national team. Tell me what it was like to be involved in that game and how pleased all of the team was to have ended the Americans' long run of undefeated games.
I mean, I think the win was good for our confidence, and we know that we can play good against the US, and we've been able to beat them the last couple of years. But it's always hard to beat the US, and we knew that they had never lost with their new
manager.
The manager, yeah. So we wanted to win against them, and so it was a huge win for us. But I think the main thing is to win against them in the World Cup, not in Algarve for me.
What's the secret? Because many have tried and many have failed to try and beat that team. Incredibly competitive, incredibly athletic, and world-class players from goalkeeper right up to the strikers. How did you prepare for that game, and what was the secret in overcoming them?
No, our plan was just to play our own game and just working hard through the whole field. And we know they had like a really strong team, and we had to play our best football to win against them. And that was our recipe for the win. And we know also that they always fight until the end, and that's the kind of team we want to be too. So it was a good win.
Well, this follows on from some decent form for the Swedish national team over the last year, 18 months. Obviously, that coincides with Pia Sundhage taking over the coaching role. Tell me what it's like playing under her, such a character and such a well-known person in the women's game.
Yeah, she's definitely a strong character, and I think it's good for our team. I mean, the last couple of years, we've been having trouble in the big tournaments, to perform in the big tournaments, and she's definitely a winner. I mean, she knows what she wants with our team, and we know we have a goal in front of us, and that is like the World Cup right now. And I think last year we did a good tournament at home for the year, during the years, but now our main goal is like the World Cup, and we're looking forward to that, and hopefully we'll be able to go even further in that tournament.
What is it about her that gets the best out of players, and for you personally, how has she developed your game?
No, I mean, like, she wants to take the best out of us. It feels like she's not happy with good. Good is not enough for her. She wants the best out of us, and she put up goals, and she says we have to go to the... We have to win this game, like before the US game. She was just determined to win that game, and that made us determined too. So I think the main thing is that she's a winner, and she's a leader too. So she's leading us in a good way.
One question I do have: has she had you up singing on stage with her yet, Kossa?
Never. It will never happen. Never, never, never. But we have some other player that has been singing with her before, so but it will never happen with me.
Oh, do you want to tell us who those players are?
No, just Olivia. She's a young player. She likes to sing.
Okay. Tell me what it's like playing alongside a player that's considered to be one of the best in the world in Lotte Schelin. Obviously, we see her scoring lots of goals for Lyon. We see her consistently playing well for Sweden. How does it help you playing alongside an experienced player like that, and how has she helped you?
I think we complete each other good. I mean, she's more the goal scorer, and I'm more the number 10 player, and I love assisting her to her goals, and it's good to have a fast player and a player that can score a lot of goals in front of me. So I just try to play my game and just to receive the ball more than she does, and just give her the ball and she'll score.
And obviously some big games coming up for Sweden this calendar year, most notably against Scotland in your World Cup qualifying group. Scotland, of course, have just completed the Cyprus Cup and were undefeated, only losing on penalties to South Korea. Do you see that as your biggest challenge, and how do you prepare to try and overcome that?
I think Scotland is a real good team, and they will definitely be our strongest, the strongest team we'll face in the group stage. So I think we need to play our best football and work really hard to beat them. But, I mean, they have a lot of players that are real good international players, and I know a couple of them, so it'll definitely be a hard game, but I'm determined and the whole team is determined that we have to win that game.
For you personally, Canada 2015, it must be a really important competition for you, because I hate to bring it up, and I'm sure that many who don't know this will be very surprised, but you obviously weren't involved in the World Cup in 2011. Does that make you even more determined and give you that hunger to be involved next year?
Yeah, definitely. But I'm just trying to stay focused on my game, and I feel like the 2011
yeah.
World Cup was in Germany.
Yep.
Yeah. After getting, I got injured in January that year, and missing the World Cup, it was really like the worst thing maybe that happened in my career. And I don't know, it's definitely a dream to play in the World Cup, and now I really hope that I can stay away from injuries for the first and just keep on developing like a player, and that will definitely be my goal to play the World Cup next year.
We've spoken a lot about Sweden. Let's look at your domestic competition with Paris Saint-Germain. A good season so far, which was without question the biggest highlight being the win away at Lyon. I was there at that game. I managed to speak to your coach afterwards, and he said it was belief that managed to get you through the game. But from a player's perspective, how big a game was that for you personally, and how do you think it will shape the team going forward?
That win definitely gave us confidence. Lyon is, I think that I will count them as the best team in the world, even though they didn't win the Champions League last year. But we knew we had to play a really, really good game to win against them. And I think our plan was definitely in that game was just to defend. And then we scored a goal, and then we just kept defending for 95 minutes. So I think for us it was like a really big win, because since the team never won against them before, so it gave us confidence, and I hope we will be able to play them one more time this year and in the final in the cup. So I think having them in the league is like the best thing, because those are the games you want to play. You want to play against the best players and against the best team, and if I could choose, I would play Lyon every day a week.
So I guess you mentioned earlier that you are through to the last eight of the Coupe de France. I'm guessing that for you personally and for the team, a trophy to finish the season off would be a sign of progress for PSG.
Yeah, definitely. That's our main goal. I mean, I hope we can go to the final for the first, and after that I hope we can play Lyon again, so that would be the best way to end this season for us.
So I'll just round off shortly, but I mean, we look back at your career. You've played in Sweden, you've played in the States with Chicago, you're currently playing for PSG. I would never ask you on an interview, do you see your future at PSG? But do you have ambitions to sort of move around a bit more in the future? You've obviously played in various countries. Will we ever see you in England?
I always say never, because I love challenges, and that's why I moved to the US when I was 20 years old. I saw it as a challenge, and to move away from home when I was that young. But the biggest challenge ever was to move here to France with a different culture, a new team, a different language. This has been the biggest challenge for me in my career. But as I said, like, I love challenges, and I love to play for a team with really high ambitions, and they want to win stuff, because I will never go to a team. The team doesn't have the ambitions. So for me, it's crucial to play for a team that has a high ambition and wants to win stuff.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Kosta, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us for this anniversary show. I think many will enjoy listening to what you've got to say. So thank you for joining us on the show, and we'll hopefully speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Download and subscribe to the show on iTunes.
Just search for Women's Football Podcast.
There we go, Kosovari Aslani. Right, let's turn our attentions to the WSL, which kicks off in a little over 2 weeks. We're going to rattle through each team and how we think they'll get on and try and pick a few players to watch next season. Who better to start with? Arsenal. Kelly, confident in the season?
Yeah, I think going into the season we're confident. We've got a whole new squad after losing, I think, 6 or 7 players at the back end of last season. So we've got fresh faces, we're gelling all the time, it's getting to know each other off the field and on the field. But I think we're going to be, you know, up there or thereabouts competing for the league again.
How has the dressing room changed? Because obviously you've lost 6 or 7 players who had been there for so long and were kind of the core of the team perhaps. How have the new players kind of rebuilt that core?
Yeah, it's different, you know. At early parts of pre-season we were only training with 5 or 6 players just due to the fact that we lost so many. So it was small group training to begin with, but as the weeks went by and the season's getting closer now, we're at a full squad of, you know, 18, 19, 20 players, what with the youth players coming up and stuff. But no, we're all looking forward to it. It's going to be a big year. It's the fourth season of the league. It's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be the most competitive league so far, with obviously a lot of players moving clubs and strengthening other teams. So it's going to be one to watch for sure.
Absolutely. Kieran, I'll bring you in. Arsenal. Who's your one to watch there?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think we look at the players that have come in. I think the obvious ones are the Japanese pair, Yukari Kinga and Shinobu Ono. I know that Shinobu struggled to settle in Lyon, I think, and didn't get the playing time that she maybe would have liked, but she's a class act. We see the Japanese players, they're very comfortable on the ball, they move it around quickly, and I've got no doubt that they will settle in almost instantly, and I'm sure Kelly's looking forward to playing alongside them. But yeah, I think Shinobu and Yukari are players to look out for. I think Jade Bailey will have a big part to play this season. We mentioned her over the course of last year. Young midfielder, really coming into her own. Played in the European Championships under-19s last year. So I think Jade Bailey's the young player to look out for, but I think the Japanese players, it's very hard to ignore them. And I know Kelly has some funny stories about them already.
Yeah, how are they settling in?
Yeah, they're, you know, settling in really well. They're both living separately in their own flats, but come to training with a smile on their face. They're such humble people, and they really want to play for Arsenal. I know Kinga especially has always, you know, it's been a dream for her to play for the club, and especially Shino too. You know, they just come with a smile on their face, and they just want to be integrated and learn the language. Kinga's probably a little bit better at speaking English, whereas Ono's coming into her own a little bit, but they just throw themselves right into it. We had some fun team game bonding stuff that it was just hilarious, you know, just even though they can't really speak the language, they just threw themselves into it, and it was really fun to see. And especially, you know, we watched their game footage back of the Birmingham game, and, you know, learning what we could have done better and stuff like that. And there was an incident, you know, where probably Ono should have scored off a pass that I made to her, and she hit it over the bar, and Shelley, our manager, stopped it and was like, unlucky, you know, good movement kind of thing. And then Ono just piped up with, "Soz, next game."
Fantastic.
Funny, I think that was from Emma Mitchell teaching her some language. But it wasn't sorry, it was Soz. So it's obviously Emma Mitchell having an impact there.
Have any of the British girls kind of taken them under their wing and kind of teaching them all the lingo?
Yeah, teaching them, you know, various football terms, right shoulder, left shoulder, turn, that kind of thing. You forget that, you know, having them playing for Japanese, they obviously a different language. So they come in here and learning these different terms, it's exciting for them to do.
Kieran, what is the Japanese for right shoulder?
Don't even go there, I haven't got a clue.
Right, let's switch to your opponents, Birmingham. A very young side, Kieran. How do you see them getting on?
Yeah, you're spot on. Young side, lost a few. Obviously lost Laura Bassett, Rachel Williams, but they've brought in a few as well. Remy Allen is a good signing that they've made from what is now Notts County. But I think they'll be okay. I'm not sure how they will be able to compete with the likes of Arsenal and Liverpool and Notts County, who've made a lot of decent signings. But I know David Parker, when you read his Twitter account, he's confident that they will be competing at the right end of the league. And they've obviously given Arsenal a good game in the first leg of their UEFA Champions League tie. They have a young left-back, Jess Carter, who I know, speaking to our friend Ish Ferguson, she said that Karen Carney spoke very highly of her. I like Aoife Mannion, I think she's another young star that will get better and better. And, you know, they've still got some of the players from last season that will play an important part. So I think they'll be OK, but maybe a little bit short in terms of being title contenders.
Kelly, you mentioned off recording that they have such a togetherness, which is going to be a strength for them.
Yeah, definitely. They're very young too, and they've got this core group of players that are hungry for success. And, you know, early on, speaking to Kaz Carney, she's heard a few whispers that they're, you know, relegation contenders. And I think she was a little bit upset by that, because she knows, you know, the togetherness that they have in the squad and the hunger and the drive that these young players have coming forward. So I think Kaz is secretly, you know, confident that they're going to do OK this year.
Possibly a big season for her, kind of leading the way?
Yeah, definitely. It's a big responsibility for Kaz, but one that she's going to take with both hands. You know, she's a leader at heart anyway. She gives everything for the club. She's a Brum girl at heart, so it's a dream come true for her to captain the club that she loves.
Bristol Academy, good season last season, having to change their manager, obviously. What are your thoughts?
It will be interesting, won't it? I think they were the surprise package of last year. Obviously, they've lost Siobhan Chamberlain, who will be keeping goal with Kelly's Arsenal. Good competition there with Irma Byrne. They've signed Mary Earps this week, who is a very, very promising young keeper who has just been called into the England squad for the game against Montenegro. Obviously, Dave Edmondson has taken over the job from Mark Sampson. He's coming from Melbourne Victory. But they've kept the core of the side from last year. They've still got the Spanish pair, Laura Del Rio and Natalia. They've still got players like Tash Harding, Grace McCattie. Corinne Yorston is obviously a good leader for them. So I think they'll be all right. I think they'll have a decent season. Whether they're able to match last year, time will tell. But I think they will be a decent package.
Kelly, obviously, how hard is it when a new manager comes in? What are your thoughts kind of trying to impress him?
Yeah, when the new manager comes in, you just want to get your head down and train as hard as possible and be noticed and try and put yourself in that starting 11. I think it's a big loss for them, you know, the quality that Mark Sampson had, and he brought them from nowhere really to winning a Champions League spot. So it's going to be hard shoes to fill for the new manager coming in. But like Kieran said, they've got most of their squad is stayed together. They've lost a few players, that's it. So they're going to be wanting to improve and impress. And let's see how they do. I think, you know, it'll be a good taster for them playing Champions League football at the back end of this season, and one that they should lap up really.
Absolutely, and Kieran, obviously quite important that they chose a manager who bought into their ethos of bringing through young players.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we spoke to BT Go, didn't we, in one of our previous shows, and she was saying how important Dave had been on her career being a 16-year-old, and I'm sure that he will continue.
I have to struggle now because my alphabet is terrible.
Chelsea.
Excellent. Well, what can you say about Chelsea? Massive overhaul, and it's probably thrown them into the title mix.
Yeah, I guess it will be dependent on how quickly they gel together. They've brought in lots of quality from abroad and from England, likes of Gilly Flaherty and Katie Chapman and Soyun.
Well done.
But they've brought in a lot of quality, and I guess it will be dependent on how quickly they settle. Lots of overhaul, but time will tell.
Two losses, obviously, for Arsenal, and two big characters in the dressing room, I would imagine. Especially Gilly.
Yeah, two big leaders for us. Gilly's young and upcoming. Just broke her way back into the England squad under Mark. But has recently picked up an Achilles injury, I believe. So, you know, she hasn't had the best pre-season, but I'm sure she'll be fit and ready to go, you know, come the start of the season. Then Katie Chapman's a big loss for us. She's the energy, the workhorse that we had at Arsenal, the box-to-box player, the aggressor. So that's a gain for Chelsea, really. But I would be looking to see them as title contenders this year with the players that they've signed. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the Korean player. She's been the three-time Korean Footballer of the Year. I've heard a lot of rave reviews about her as being a top playmaker. So hopefully she can do that in the league and light Chelsea up this year, but not at the expense of Arsenal.
Hey, look at that. Look at the research. It's going to be fun for you, I think, coming up against them, though, won't it?
Yeah, definitely. There's always a tough game. There's always that rivalry between the two London clubs, and it'll be probably have a little bit extra bite this year, being that Katie and Julie have gone across. But I think they're going to be hungry for it. The players that they've had, like you said, it's time to gel for them, like it is with us. So let's see who's at the races first.
They got them in early though, so that might help. Who's next?
Your club.
All right. Well, we better switch.
Okay, so I'm going to take on the questions here. Everton Ladies is the next one. Lots of changes, lots of young players. You obviously had Andy Spence on a recent show. Are you confident? Is the atmosphere good at the club at the moment?
No. No, I'm joking. No, you said obviously there was a lot of changes. There's been obviously major departures, but I've seen them in pre-season. They look like a unit. I think what Everton will pride themselves on is not having big players this season. I think the emphasis has always been on youth. He's augmented his squad with youth again. There are some terrific players coming in and players that people have not heard of who are ready to play in the first team. He's also added a few. Megan Walsh is a fantastic prospect in goal. And Gabby George is someone who Andy was very excited to sign, because I think most of the league was chasing Gabby, and Andy was telling me that she is pretty much ready to play already. So that's quite exciting. But it's the trust in youth that's quite refreshing, I think. Obviously, there's a lot of other teams that are trusting youth as well. But Andy is unwavering in his belief in these players. And I think that's probably what's going to surprise a few people, that they play together and for him. And I think none more so than Michelle Hinnigan, who's certainly, from my point of view as their press officer, a great choice as captain, because she's bonkers. Mm-hmm. But she also she captures that that essence of what Everton's about as a club, you know, bringing through players. She's come through with the youth team, and now she's captain at 23. So it's going to be an interesting season, I think. I think we'll shock a few people.
Kelly, you've obviously seen a number of young players come through Arsenal, likes of Jordan Nobbs in the past. Jade Bailey will, I'm sure, have a big impact on the season this year. How important is it to have that combination of young players but also the experienced players that you've got at Arsenal?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's about finding the mix, because you need that experience in there to help with the older players lead the way, and then you need that youth, that vibrant energy, like a Jordan Nobbs that comes onto the scene and just, you know, takes it with both hands. So it's finding that mix and that balance. But just a player that I want to mention just for Arsenal that we missed out was Leah Williamson. For me, at the age of, she's 17 today actually, I think. Happy birthday, Leah. But yeah, no, she's just been called up to the under-19 squad at 17, so that just says it all there. And just speaking to Lois Fidler, who's coached her, who's a friend of mine, just said that she'll be some player someday. And just seeing her come up to the first team squad now and training, you know, she's ready for me. It's just how Shelley dips her in and out of the games now to give her that early experience. But she's certainly a player to watch for me, is Leah Williamson.
Kelly, you obviously have taken on a bit more of a coaching role. Is part of your remit kind of looking after the young players?
To some extent, yeah. I haven't actually done too much coaching at the minute, as we've been in pre-season myself and I've been playing and trying to get fit for the season. But it's all about me learning under Shelley and having contact and communication with her about how the players are feeling and what we feel like we need to do better in training at, or looking at games and playing certain players, and team selection and stuff like that. But I am currently taking my coaching badges, so hopefully, you know, that's the route I'm going to go down.
Good stuff.
Liverpool.
Liverpool, right, reigning champions. And you'd fancy them to be on top again at the end of the season?
I think they're going to be there or thereabouts. Absolutely no doubt about that whatsoever. They've managed to keep the core of their team, but they have suffered some seriously bad news with injuries. Obviously, Lucy Staniforth was a signing from Bristol Academy. She's gone down with a knee injury and will miss the season. Nicole Rolser has also gone down with an injury, and it's likely that she's going to miss the season as well. Obviously, Louise Fors won't be there this season. Whitney Engen won't be there this season, but they've still got some quality there. The likes of Gemma Bonner led the team really well last year. Tash Dowie was obviously top scorer in the division. But they've added Martha Harris, very well-respected defender, obviously played for the under-19s last year in the European Championships. And obviously, Libby Stout, the American goalkeeper, and I'm sure that Kelly will have some good words to say about a certain Gemma Davison.
Mm. Yeah, obviously, Gemma's left us to go elsewhere, to Liverpool. I think it's a big signing for Liverpool because she was game-winner for us at times for Arsenal, just her pace and creativity and her forward ability and pace did it for me. So you know, she's got now, she's not a young bunny anymore. She's got a lot of experience, having played in America and obviously won a number of titles under with Arsenal. So she's a big player for Liverpool. I feel like she's going to be their go-to player to some extent. You know, I think Tash Dowie will enjoy playing with her, with her pace and crossing ability. Maybe we'll see Tash get some more goals this year, purely from Gemma's creativity. But I think all eyes will be on Gemma this year because, you know, I think moving from Arsenal to Liverpool, it was a big move for her. So hopefully she'll do well and see how she goes.
Arsenal have been sort of the top club in England for quite a while, Kels. And I guess that with Liverpool winning the league last year, there were a lot of questions about them, whether they would be able to push at the top. And obviously they came through. Does it kind of make you at Arsenal and the players there more determined to try and reclaim your crown, knowing that there are clubs like Liverpool who are strengthening and are really making a push?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think every year our main goal is to win the league. It's just the Arsenal's winning mentality. We want every competition that we're in, we want to be, you know, winners, and rightly so. If you want, you need that winning mentality to play at this level. You know, having won the league a number of times with Arsenal, that the second tier, you know, like a Liverpool that have won it, and rightly so, they were the best team throughout the campaign last year. But it's always interesting to see how they do second year running.
I was going to ask you about that.
The pressure's on you now. Yeah, you've signed a couple of players. Obviously, they've lost a couple of injuries, but the expectations are on you more now. So it's how you deal with that pressure. And I think with Arsenal, that's something that we've had to become used to over the years, is the pressure's always on you to perform and, you know, win those games when it's 0-0 and, you know, there's 5 minutes to go and you need to pick up those 3 points to keep yourself at the top of the table. For me, it would be interesting to see how Liverpool deal with that. I'm not saying that they're not capable, but I'm just going to be looking out for that this year.
Man City. I'm going to put it on record right now. I don't see Man City doing much this season.
Oh,
sorry.
Controversial in your last show, mate.
Yep.
Controversial.
It's because I'm going, yeah.
You're seriously saying that because you're leaving and you know that if there is any backlash, it's going to be against me, isn't it?
I
think that City, they've made good signings. There's no question about that. Tony Duggan.
Not enough for me.
Well, Tony Duggan was a good player last year. Steph Horton will obviously be a big loss for Arsenal in a big game. Jill Scott was one of Everton's linchpins last season. But I can see where you're coming from to an extent. I'm not as confident as you that they're not going to do anything this year. They've got a brilliant spine there. Karen Barzy is obviously a good keeper. They've brought in Betsy Hassett. Izzy Christensen will be a good player for them. She was a bright spark at Birmingham. And I think that you know as well as I do, Everton were interested in her as well. And obviously they weren't able to compete financially with City. But I'm not as confident as you, but I can see where you're coming from. I asked the question to Nicky Harding when I was up for Man City's launch. You've got a lot of players there that have not played in the WSL before. A lot of those players a couple of years ago were playing in the Premier League North, which is two divisions below. How are they going to cope with that pressure? Number one, of playing against the likes of Kelly Smith. And number two, dealing with that pressure with so much attention on Man City.
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Kelly, they're an unknown quantity, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and I agree with Kieran. Like, they have a good spine of their team, but I don't think there's that much expectation on them themselves. Just speaking to Steph in camp, you know, they want to do well this year, but I think they're building for the future. You know, this season they're going to see how they do. But I think, you know, the real, when they get their players in that they want in a couple of years, then I think they'll be a force to be reckoned with. But this season I just don't see that they'll be up there fighting for the title.
Just it is a positive thing. You know, a club like Man City coming into the league and spending so much money and bringing in these players in, you know, over successive years.
It's exciting, definitely, because it adds that other dimension. You know, Man City are a big powerhouse in the men's game. So can they be now the powerhouse and translate it to the women's game? We'll see in a few years, I guess. But just the signings that they've made, and I know that Hope Solo was over visiting, so maybe there's a link there that they want to bring her in, who knows. But it's, you know, I was just speaking to Steph that the project that they have going up there, well, she left to go join it, so it must be something that she believes in and she wants to be a part of. Likewise with Tony, Jill and KB. So, yeah, it's exciting for them, sure.
Apparently Hope Solo is a Manchester City fan. I did contact
I did contact
the club and ask them about her visit. They said that she's a Man City fan. She had a gap in her training schedule and she was purely here just to watch the team. So whether you believe that or not, I don't know, because Hope has certainly been linked with the club in the past.
She sure has. One to watch, certainly. I'm just going to quickly say, I think that Liverpool versus Man City game is going to be quite telling at the start of the season. And that's why I'm going. Right, who is has the last team, isn't it? Go on.
Notts County.
Oh, yeah. How did we forget them?
No, you forgot them. Yeah. No, we didn't. You forgot them.
What can I say? I'm on form. Notts County, obviously another team that has brought in a large number of players, but they seem to be gelling quite well as well.
I think that Notts County have kind of got it right in the sense that they've kept a lot of the core of last season, but they've added to it with the likes of Desiree Scott and Katie Hoyle and Ellen White and Rachel Corsi. Really quality international players, and I think it goes back to what Emma Hayes and Andy Spence said in previous shows. When we're bringing in players from abroad, you want them to be that class that's going to make the league better. And coming up against the likes of Kelly and Jordan Nobbs and Steph Horton, for me, coming up against those players in the league will make them better players. So I think Notts County have got a good blend there. They obviously will build on last season. They've lost Casey Stoney, which is obviously a big loss for them. They've lost Karen Barsley, but I think they'll be there or thereabouts, definitely.
What does Ellen White, a player you know well, what does she bring to that side?
Energy, work rate, enthusiasm. I like playing with Ellen. She's always, you know what you're going to get with her. She's a team player, gives everything, lays it all on the line, and it's another loss for us from Arsenal. But, you know, she'll do well there. I'm not sure of the position that she'll play, whether she'll play a nine or out on the left or right. That's yet to be told, but... Is it also Caitlin Friend that they signed here and from Australia? So she's a 20-year-old coming in, did really well out in Australia. So it's, you know, they've signed a few international players. So looking forward to seeing how they gel and what they bring this year. But I think this team will be a surprise package.
Fantastic. So that's all of it, I think. Who do you see winning the title?
Do I really have to put my neck on the line? I've got Kelly Smith sat in front of me. How can I not say Arsenal? How can I not say Arsenal when she's giving me the evils? I think it's going to be... I'm not going to say outright. I would say... I think it's between Arsenal, Liverpool and Notts County for me.
Notts County. Interesting choice. Kelly, obviously.
Yeah, I'm going to go top three of Arsenal, Chelsea and Liverpool. They're my three main contenders.
I have to say Everton. I have to say Everton. I'm contractually obliged to say Everton. Right, fantastic. That is our preview of the WSL. And after this, we shall have a little look at the NWSL.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
So the NWSL kicks off in 2 weeks as well. And obviously, it's going to be very exciting to see how the Houston Dash get on, being as they are the newest team to that division. And Kelly, I believe you have come across one of their sort of senior management team.
Yeah, Tony DiCicco has been appointed. I'm not sure of his actual title, but he's on one of the backroom staff. So I don't think he's in a coaching role, but he's very knowledgeable on the youth system and the US national team players and youth soccer out there. So it doesn't surprise me that he's been appointed. He's a great coach, very very knowledgeable, and knows his stuff and knows the players, you know, to recruit for the Dash. So it's a good appointment for them, I see.
And Kieran, largely no pressure on them, I wouldn't say.
No, I think we spoke to the president of the Houston Dynamo, who obviously will act as president for the Dash as well, didn't we, Chris Canetti, and he said that this is a season of building and setting the foundations. I think that there's no expectation on the Dash to do anything. The other teams have got a season under their belt, so I think for them it's going to be a work in progress, and we'll just have to see how they do. I'm sure they'll be competitive, but genuinely at this stage don't see them competing at the top of the league.
Let's talk about Flash and Kansas City, who pushed Portland for the title very, very closely, and they'll do so again, won't they?
Yeah, both strengthened, both brought in players. Like the fact that Kansas have brought in Katrina Gorey, the Australian international, think she'll add a lot of quality. Amy Rodriguez has obviously moved over from Seattle, so she is a proven goal scorer in America. I think she'll add a lot of quality. They've lost Lauren Sesselman, who has obviously gone over to Houston. I'd like to wish Lauren well because she's just had surgery. She's got a bad injury, so I'm not sure if she's going to play this season. But yeah, and the New York Flash, we know what you get with them. They were competitive last season. They've got that driving force, Carly Lloyd, in midfield. I'd actually like to ask Kelly what it's like to play against Carly, because she's so dynamic, so box to box. What is it like to play against a player like that?
It's enjoyable because you know what you're going to get. She's a workhorse, but she's also got good quality on the ball. Just having experience playing against her with England and in the US national team, and then with Boston and Chicago Red Stars when she was there. So it was always a battle between us. Even though she was higher up the field and I was higher up the field, it was always like, you know, can we influence our team to be the winning outfit that day? But she's a top draw player and certainly a strength for any team that has her.
Speaking of Boston, that's your former club. Lost Sydney Leroux, but have gained Lisa Devanna. And that's a good signing for them.
It was a loss to lose. That's rhymes. A loss to lose Leroux. but yeah, no, because she scored 11 goals for Boston last year. So any time a team loses their top goal scorer, it's going to hurt them. And it's Seattle's gain, really. I think they needed a front player. But Lisa Devanna coming in, she's a proven goal scorer, especially at that level. And her pace, I'm speaking to Leanne Sanderson in camp in Cyprus, she was like, we need to sign a big name. And Devanna's certainly a big name from Australia. She scores goals wherever she goes. And Leanne likes to play with players that are fast, because Leanne's good on the turn and then playing that last final ball through. So Leanne's especially excited that, you know, they've signed a top player in her.
Leanne seems to be enjoying herself out there.
Oh, she loves it, yeah. She was born to be out there, you know, she's happy out there, she's settled, and, you know, she's playing really well and enjoying life, and obviously being called back into the England squad, she's got a big, massive smile on her face, and she's enjoying her football, and that's what it's all about.
Chicago Red Stars did well in the draft, and did well picking up Karina LeBlanc as well.
Yeah, we spoke to Karina, she's a character. I'm interested, I saw Karina's KK Cam, which is a YouTube video that she does from the Cyprus Cup. And if you haven't seen it, have a look, because it is hilarious. She gets players from different countries involved, and it's quite funny hearing them trying to do their best Italian language, and hearing Emma Mitchell's is pretty, pretty amusing. So I would definitely encourage people to have a watch of that. But yeah, Chicago will be competitive. Kristen Press is obviously a big pickup for them. Karina LeBlanc will be a solid goalkeeper for them. Julie Johnston, obviously their first round pick from the draft, has committed herself this week. So I think she's going to be a player to look out for, really dynamic and will add a lot of quality. Jerry Smith, obviously, in our last show spoke very highly of her. And yeah, I think Chicago will be there or thereabouts.
Kelly, that brings us nicely onto Seattle. And if American audiences don't know Kim Little, they soon will.
Yeah, definitely. She's a great player. Learning the trade, but, you know, developing her own style at the same time. I love playing with her at Arsenal. You knew that you get the ball to Kim Little and she'll create something or make that final pass or even score a goal. So, you know, she's certainly a player to watch out there. I hope she does really well. I think she will. She's under Laura Harvey, who we know from, you know, my Arsenal days as being a top coach, and really enthusiastic and full of energy and wanting to win. So I think, you know, it's probably made Kim's transition a little easier going to a club where she knows the coach already, in Laura, having played under her. But no, Kim's going to absolutely love that experience playing with top players like Megan Rapinoe, Hope Solo, Sydney Roos now there. So there's just to name a few, because probably more that I can't even think of. But I think the American public will really love Kim's style. She's a proper footballer, very comfortable with the ball at her feet, and can change a game just like that.
America seems to agree with Laura Harvey as well, which is, again, unsurprising.
Yeah, she was headhunted from Arsenal. You know, she was a name here, so obviously, you know, anybody that coaches Arsenal is going to be, you know, kind of in the spotlight, so to speak. So I think their organisation had a few interviews with her, and we're really pleased with what they found, and obviously hired her. And she's done a really good job this year with you know, signing a few good players, and see how they go. They didn't have a particularly good season last year, but hopefully the team can gel they've got some decent players and see where they end up.
She's used to winning as well, isn't she?
She is, yeah, having that winning mentality. She was at Birmingham for a while, kind of learnt the trade there, playing in the league, and then come across to Arsenal and won a number of honours. So, you know, hopefully she'll do the same at Seattle.
A couple of other decent additions as well, Kawasumi.
Yeah, Nahomi Kawasumi, or as they're calling her, Homie.
No, they're not.
No, they are. Genuinely, Nahomi Kawasumi, she comes over with the nickname Nao, but the Seattle Reign have now christened her Homie. So she's now Homie Kawasumi. So, yeah, I think she'll settle in well. She's a dynamic forward. We've spoken about the Japanese players at Arsenal, and she will be no different. She will add quality. Bev Gobel, we obviously have spoken to before. She will be a threat going forward. I mean, it's just scary how good that team is. And they are favourites in a lot of people's eyes, but with favourite tags comes a lot of expectation. I think that, you know, there are other teams that will want to try and damage that Washington spirit, if obviously strengthen their squad with the likes of Jody Taylor and Yael Averbuch, who we've spoken endlessly about, so we won't go into too much detail about them. Sky Blue, I'm not overly familiar with a lot of what Sky Blue have been doing. They obviously let Lisa Devanna go to Boston, which I found a very strange move for them. Christy Rampone will obviously marshal the troops. She's still the linchpin of that team and will have a big part to play, but obviously they've got the likes of Sophie Schmidt as well, who will be dynamic from midfield. But Seattle favourites for me, still Portland as the champions, and the strength that the additions that they've made to the squad would be favourites for me.
Kelly, how do you deal with that favourites tag?
Well, you're a favourite for a reason, because you're good. And you have to have that win-winning mentality. You know that every time that you go out, teams are going to want to knock you down. So it's that mentality of knowing you have to give everything on the line every game. And it's about doing it. You know, you have to bring your A game every game. And for Arsenal, for a number of years, we have been favourites to win the league. So it's hard to stay at the top, but we'll see how they deal with it.
We'll also see how Portland do with it, and you managed to catch Paul Riley, didn't you?
I did, yep. I mentioned earlier that they are, for me, favourites for the league. They've made a lot of additions to what was already a strong squad, so I managed to speak to head coach Paul Riley, and here he is. Okay, so we're delighted to be joined by Portland Thorns coach, who happens to be from Liverpool in England, so obviously we're delighted to have him, being an English-based show. Paul Riley. Paul, thanks for joining us. First of all, you're currently out in Arizona for a pre-season training camp. How's it going out there?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, it's been raining in Portland for 5 days, and we've been out here for 5 days, and it's 80 degrees, and great facilities we're at, and the weather's been fantastic. So, obviously helping in pre-season, especially in preparation for our opener, which is at Houston. You know, playing in 55 degrees is a lot different than playing in 85, so, and then it's just great preparation for us to get ready for the Houston game.
How important is it to play in conditions like that? Because the NWSL season, although it's short, it's quite intense, isn't it? And the league itself, very athletic, very quick. How important is it to get the right conditions early on?
Yeah, I mean, we have a really tough schedule. Obviously, we're one of the two West Coast teams, so we do a lot of travelling to the East Coast. And, you know, it's like going to Europe to play games in Turkey and places like this on a Wednesday and having to come back on a Saturday and play at home or in Seattle. You know, it's not an easy thing to do. So, you know, getting used to temperatures, different temperatures, and we train on turf in Portland because the weather's not good enough to get on the grass yet. And, you know, to be on grass and playing in high temperatures is a great preparation for us. And we got most of the players in. We're still missing a couple. You know, Alex Morgan's still injured, so we don't have her with us. And Tilbert Heath's still in France. And Steph Catley, our Australian left back, is still with the Australian national team until after the Asian Games. So we're still missing some players. You know, Rachel Buehler's in from the US team, and Sinclair, the captain of the Canadian team's in. So we're pretty well got a lot of our players in, just not everyone. But for them, it's a great opportunity to get away from Portland, get away from the rain, and get each other in a hotel and do everything together. And, you know, it's a brand new team almost. I've brought 12 players in since I came on board. We only got 10 players returning from the team that won it last year. And it's a whole new team.
How do you manage the training, bearing in mind that some of your players have been away on international duty, Algarve Cup, Cyprus Cups, for example? Obviously, there are players that are different levels in terms of fitness and readiness for the new season. How do you kind of separate the players that have played more than others and sort of make sure they're all training at the same level?
Yeah, I mean, what we did was we gave them off a week when they came in, So both Sinclair and Rachel Buehler, the two coming from the Algarve, we gave them a week off, and then, to be honest with you, they're straight back in full-time training. We're in two-a-days. We've been two-a-days for 17 days. They've had a couple of days off inside those 17 days, but even today, we trained this morning. We've got a game tonight, and we'll continue the two-a-days probably for another week, and then we'll start to slow it down as we get towards Houston. But, you know, obviously, we gave them a pretty good heavy packet, pre-season packet coming in, so that the level of fitness was much higher than I anticipated, and that obviously helps our end of it. We don't have to kill them in the two practices. We've been able to do a lot of stuff, especially this week, technical end of it. We've been working on it since we've been in Arizona, and away from cameras and away from the press a little bit. There's a lot of press and cameras in Portland, so here it's a little bit quieter, and it's been a lot of fun with the players, and I think they're just excited to kick somebody else tonight as opposed to themselves, which we've been doing for 17 days now.
And it's relatively new for you, isn't it? I mean, you've been based out in the States for pretty much 30 years, but most of that, if not all of it, has been spent on the East Coast. How are you adjusting to life on the other side of the country?
Yeah, it's been tricky for me, to be honest with you. You know, I've obviously only been to Portland once, which is to sign a contract, and I left on a red-eye flight back to New York, and most of my coaches have been in Philadelphia and New York and those areas, plus I played in those areas for a long time, went to college in those areas, so I really haven't been on the West Coast at all, so it's definitely strange, but I love Portland, a fantastic city, and, you know, I've been to a couple of the Portland Timbers game, the men's team, and they sing from the first minute to the 90th minute, and you come from Liverpool, that's something to embrace, you know, the great atmosphere, and it's probably the only place I've been to in the United States that has an atmosphere like the Premier League ground, and, you know, last year, the women's team, we averaged between 13 and 15,000. So we hope to get, you know, somewhere around 16,000 to 18,000 this year. We're over 10,000 season tickets sold. So all those things just create a great atmosphere. And the fans, you know, outside the ground 2 days before the game, they've got tents outside the ground. I mean, the atmosphere is just incredible there. And it's a really true soccer city. And people say, oh, well, why is it in Portland? Well, I think one of it is we don't have a football team, American football. We don't have a baseball team. So it's just soccer. And both Timbers and the Thorns are really well supported, so it's great news for women's soccer, and that's one of the reasons I took the job, to be perfectly honest with you. I felt it was a great opportunity to have a program that could build and you know, get to 2 or 3 sellouts maybe in a year. It would be 20,000, 22,000, and you know, that's unheard of in Europe and probably anywhere in the world. You can get a women's game where there'll be 20,000, 22,000 people at a soccer game, so that's our goal, and you know, hopefully we can sell 2 or 3 games out this year and everybody into the ground.
We're taking on a title-winning side, and you mentioned Steph Catley already. You've obviously already brought in as well Amber Brooks from Bayern Munich and German international keeper Nadine Angerer. How happy are you with the shape of your squad going into the new season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like all the 7 players, the best stature. It's really helped the group, and Amber Brooks has come in, and to liken it to Stevie Gerrard, everyone laughs because I'm such a huge Liverpool fan, but I mean, that's who she plays like, because she can spray the ball around, and I haven't seen that many females in the game over the last decade that can do that, but she's one of those players, and you know, she scores goals from that area just like Gerrard does too, and she's great on set pieces, and she's got a tremendous engine, and I mean, you know, Nadine came in a week ago, the German goalkeeper, and she's just brilliant, great personality, great presence. You know, she walked in the locker room, and it's just as if she's been there for 5 years. I mean, a true character of the game, and great presence, great goalkeeping ability, obviously. But I was just hoping that she would fit in, and she hits him really, really well. You know, Steph Catley, obviously, we're pretty close to signing another huge foreign player, which is, I think, the best midfielder in the world. And I think when we get her in with the midfield that we've got, we're going to have a really, really strong team. You know, and then, yeah, you know, Alex Morgan obviously isn't here yet. She's still injured. And obviously, Alex and Sinclair have played together before. I think we've got a good mix, too, of some of the younger players. Shane Fowler, who played for me in Philadelphia, we brought in. And she's another girl with a fantastic engine. And there's some players who played for me when they were actually younger, like Ali Wong, who was here last year when they won the league. And again, experienced player who's very clever on the ball. And, you know, I'm hoping that it's just really the pre-season this month is trying to blend them all together and find out what everyone's good at and what marriages work and strengths, weaknesses on and off the field, and try and help every player improve their game, you know, coming into the season. And, you know, like you said, I think 6 months sounds like it's a short season. There's a lot of games and a lot of travelling. Sometimes it's a, you know, it's a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, and you go on East Coast, West feel the next minute, and then on a not so great field, and then our stadium, you know, is magnificent, and you know, they just redid the turf in our place because Bayern Munich's coming there for the MLS All Star game. So you know, our facilities I think are really great for women's soccer, but some of the facilities aren't as high as they should be, and I think that's part of what the league is building, and hopefully over the next 2 years, everyone will have better stadiums and more soccer only type stadiums where they can draw 8,000 to 10,000, and you know, it's a great way to build the league, I think.
Well, you've brought in a number of high-profile players. I'm pretty interested to be finding out about the other player that you've mentioned that I'm hoping will be announced soon. But other clubs around you have been strengthening as well, and none more so than your noisy neighbours down the road in Seattle. How exciting is it to sort of have that challenge? And if you're talking about sellouts, it's probably going to come in that Seattle game, isn't it?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, Seattle has really improved their roster. Laura's done a great job with the group, and well, I think we're excited, both of us, to be coaching against each other, and they've really got some good players. I mean, I was huge on Kim Little, and you know, I went to England when we were looking at the England job, and I watched the play, and I was like, wow, she would be great, you know, and I think Laura jumped on it pretty quickly, but she's a great pickup, and I mean, that's going to be a really tough game for us this year, and you know, we have to play them 4 times, so it's not the best scenario. We get to play probably the best team in the league 4 times, twice at home, twice away. But, you know, Seattle and Portland are renowned. It's like Manchester United, Liverpool. It's that type of environment, and the fans do not like each other whatsoever. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, when you get that rivalry in women's soccer, it's not a thing that you see too often in many countries. And I think you're really going to see a great local derby this year. And I'm hoping that will be the game that we sell out and we put over 20,000 in the stands and make it a really fantastic game. Obviously, we want the 3 points, but...
Absolutely. You mentioned Laura. Obviously, Mark Parsons is head coach at Washington, so that's three English coaches managing, well, three of nine clubs, so a third of the clubs in the NWSL being managed by English coaches. What benefit have you found working in the States, and why do you think it's an attraction for English coaches to work out there?
Well, I think the fact that, I would say a couple of things. One, the facilities for the teams are really good here. I think also the amount of players that you've got to choose from is unbelievable compared to most countries. Bigger crowds. I think that's why the Europeans will start to come here, the players. Now, they came for WPS, the last league, and I think the wait to see how it's progressing, I think you're definitely going to see more this year coming in, and I think with the World Cup year, there'll be more players coming in from abroad, and hopefully they'll improve the amount of numbers you can bring in. But I think, you know, I like to have three or four foreign players in the lineup and in the practice because they bring such a great culture from Europe. You know, I had Vera for me to play for the Spanish national team in Philly, and you know, she'd sit and watch the games with me. Everyone else would go home after practice, and you know, the players' lounge would be putting on the Champions League, and she would sit and watch every game. You know, and I was always trying to get the American players to do that and watch games, and that's the biggest negative of American players, you just don't watch enough football, you know. I've been getting our team to watch a lot of Liverpool recently, as much as possible. They want to see, you know, the best team in England play, so I've been getting them to watch Liverpool play. Not so boring like Chelsea or anything like that. I think the fact the more games they can watch and the more things they can see and are recognisable of players and things like that. But in terms of the coaches, I mean, obviously Laura and Mark have put good rosters together. Washington's going to be a lot better this year. Seattle has got a scary roster, to be perfectly honest with you. They're a dangerous team, no question. And you know, she knows not only the players in Europe now, but she's obviously got a good handle on the players in America. And, you know, she's made some great, great pickups. Sydney Leroux, I mean, Sydney special. And she can change a game in an instant. That's a great pickup. And look forward to the games, to be honest with you, against them. And, I'm excited to be in Portland. I think it's a great opportunity and got great ownership, fantastic general manager, and all the support that he could really ask for in any women's or men's soccer. The support has just been incredible.
That would be us wrapping it up, Paul. I really appreciate your time. I will actually be out in Portland for your first game against Seattle Reign in May, so I look forward to seeing you out there.
That's great. I'll see you then. Thanks very much.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Want more views from those in the game?
Read the blog at
thewfblog.wordpress.com.
So there was Paul Riley, who brought our NWSL look ahead to an end. And Kelly, we've got to end on you. Let's talk England first, and a new manager for you to work under. How is it different?
It was my first time being involved. Obviously, I wasn't involved in the La Manga trip. I'd spoke with Mark beforehand, but was delighted to be involved in his second trip. But it's just a different atmosphere. Obviously, hope's gone now. It's a new England, as Mark likes to call it. He's come in, he wants to bring his own philosophy. He's got a totally different coaching style. He's trying to gel the team. We're doing a lot of group activities, team bonding, a lot of meetings early on, just to understand the way he wants us to play. He's trying to instill a lot of confidence into us and belief. So it's different in that manner, but it's a little bit more relaxed. But I enjoyed my time away this time.
Obviously, the rankings came out as well, and that made quite a happy reading.
Yeah, I think we've moved up to 8th, is it? Yeah, probably our highest ranking. I don't know, we normally linger around the 10, 11, 12 mark. And I think that helped by the performances out in Cyprus, bumped us up a couple of places. So it's obviously delighting to move up in those spots. But, what really matters is tournament play and doing it then. And I think for a few years, we haven't, really fulfilled our potential in tournaments. We normally get to the quarterfinals or the semifinals and then fall away. So it'll be interesting for Mark. Obviously, it looks like we're going to qualify unless we slip up for 2015 in Canada. So it's Mark picking those right players and getting their mentality right to maybe do something special in Canada.
Good Cyprus Cup, Kels. But one question I've got, when the hell are we going to beat France?
Yeah, I know, we think that every time. I don't know, we just seem to, not crumble, but, sometimes I think our mentality is there. It's just maybe just players aren't at the races or just giving the ball away in silly areas, and France are better at us than that at times. They keep the ball, whereas I think sometimes we're sloppy in possession against the top teams, and that's when you need to be, keeping the ball and making them work for it. So I think at times that's what we need to improve on.
Is it quite tough? I mean, obviously you've got a game coming up against Montenegro, and the calibre of opposition in Cyprus was okay. It wasn't world class. Is it quite tough having so many kind of okay teams as opposition and only rarely coming up against these top teams?
It's a tough one because Canada are a top team, Finland are improving, and Italy are improving. So I wouldn't say they're below par teams. These are still, good international teams, and that's what you want. You want that replication of tournament football, because when it comes to Canada, you want to be playing a game, then resting for 2 days, and then going again, and having that right squad mentality. But I think if you're in a tougher group, i.e., let's just say out USA, Germany, and England, and Sweden, then you're playing three big, strong, international, great footballing sides, and you need to be at the races straight off. But that's the only way that you can replicate stuff is by trying out, going to the Cyprus Cup and experiencing those kind of tournaments, whereas in the Algarve, they do the same thing. There's some top nations there, so it's all swings and roundabouts, really.
Obviously, Montenegro up next in World Cup qualifying. Do you hope to play a part?
I'd like to, yeah. Obviously, I've made the squad for this time around. It's just about going there and having a good few days of training and then putting yourself in the coach's mind as a starting player. But if you're not a starting player, then you still got to give your all as a supporter from the bench. I think Mark's big on one team ethos, and everybody in it together. Even if you're not on, you're not playing, you want to support the team and the players that are playing on the field. And I think at times in the past that hasn't happened. So it's really trying to change people's mentalities a little bit.
We alluded to your first steps into coaching earlier in the show. Where do you want to end up with that?
Well, the goal right now is to obviously learn under Shelley and get my coaching experience in with our youth system, with Arsenal, and then develop myself as a coach and see where I go from there, really. My plans are just to stay involved in the game as long as possible, playing-wise, and then venture down the coaching route and see where that leads me.
So are you constantly in Shelley's ear going, why have you done that? What's this about?
No, we have a lot of communication about training and why we're doing certain drills and why she's you know, doing this and that. And we speak about team selection and look at the opposition and think, how can we hurt them with certain players? So I do have a little bit of input, and I like to hear what she's thinking. And she bounces ideas off of me, and I'm her second voice. She might listen to me, she might not. It's up to her, really.
I think we better keep it at that, otherwise this show is going to go into another month.
Well, I did have just another question for Kelly. Obviously, she's had an illustrious career, played for a number of years. The WSL is going into its fourth year, as we already mentioned earlier. I just wondered what your feelings were on where women's football is at the moment in this country. Do you think it's kind of where it should be? Are we behind? Are we ahead of where we are? I mean, compare it to when you were starting out. I'm sure it's very, very different. But in terms of how things are going, what are the sort of views of the players at the moment?
I think it's a really exciting time for women's football in this country. I know everyone speaks about how big the Olympics was, and coming off of the back of that, the growth of it, and that was the platform that we needed, and it certainly was. But I do think now, with obviously BT Sport coming on board and them giving the public the access to watch women's football, the England games are on TV, BBC, that's fantastic, because you need the games to be on TV in order for it to be watched. Hopefully we get a good support down at Brighton against Montenegro. But I do feel like the game is in a good place right now. We're slowly getting more fans to the FAWSL games, which is great. And I think what's also good is that the league, you don't know who's going to win the league this year, because at the times with Arsenal, you know, you'd kind of win the league like a few years back, whereas now you're saying, you know, three, possibly four teams can win it. So it's exciting for the players and also for the fans that come and watch too.
Is it just a case of enjoying this for a little while and then looking to step up, or does it kind of need to be moved forward very quickly?
I think it's all about baby steps. You don't want to go too big too soon, because that's what happened in America for the first and second league, and then it busted. So, you know, clubs financially, you don't want to see them struggling. You want to see players being paid, you know, a wage to live on, but you don't want to see them crippled and the teams crumble, like Birmingham did a few years back. You know, the Birmingham men pulled the money on the women's game. But I think it's heading in the right direction. All clubs are on a certain budget that's been worked out, so I see good things happening.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Well, that brings us to the end of the show, and I'm going to have to hand over the microphone to you, Kieran. I'm
welling up.
Yeah, obviously your last show, mate. It's been a goodie. I think for a 1 year anniversary show, your last one, it's been a real pleasure to have someone like Kelly Smith, someone who's admired in this country. And I know her sitting here, it's probably a bit embarrassing for her when you're, you know, talking very highly of someone. But she is a legend in this country, and I think to have her on a birthday show, your last show, has been great. But from my personal view, it's been great to present alongside you. Thank you for helping me set this up. And I guess the only thing that's left to do is to rattle off a few of the contact details. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're on @WFPod. Thank you very much for everyone who's following us. We've passed 3,000 followers, so that is great. If you want to contact us via email, you can do. It's thewfpod@gmail.com. We're on Sport Lobster, which is sportlobster.com/WFPod. And don't forget to read our blog, which is thewfblog.wordpress.com. And I think that is all that is left for me to say. I've got to say a massive thank you to Kelly Smith, and I hope that she will come back and help me present, seeing as I'm now going to have to fill some void. So, Kelly, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure. I know we've been trying to get me on for a while, and it's finally happened. So, no, I appreciate you asking, and me giving my time for you guys is always a pleasure.
Great stuff. So, Hamish, I think last word from you, my friend.
Just want to say thank you to everyone for their support over the last year. I'm going to miss doing this very much, but I leave it in trusted hands. So I can't sign off. I can't do it.
So that's it. Time for us to say goodbye. See you later. Until next time, I will be on the next show.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.